Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, Mr. James Fox. And joining us tonight as a special event here, Mr. Steve Hassman, a.k.a. Sleepy Harold. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Can't complain too much. How you doing, James? You good?
Oh, fine. Yeah. Sundays are good. So
sort of anyway
kind of. Oh god, yeah. Other than like the watching the Bears part, but yeah, like the rest of the league, so Sundays are fine.
Yeah, how long did you watch that?
Until I saw Tyson Bagent, and then I turned it off.
Yes.
And then I was arguing with people like, oh, they just benched the, I mean, they didn't bench anybody, the game's over. It's like, this is what teams do in blowouts. But yeah, it's kind of like, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, that was, even I was like, stop it. He's already dead.
Yeah, right.
So some interesting things have happened this week. Get away from that nastiness for you. Some interesting things happened this weekend in the front office for the White Sox. Josh Barfield was apparently considered for the Baltimore Orioles GM position, which is a interesting development. I don't know that any of us had that tabbed for year one, more or less, for Barfield. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I guess like you always hear like, oh, future GM, like this guy, we heard it forever, right? We heard about Jeremy Haber and like nobody was ever interested in him. And that was like one of the things like in the Kenny and Rick front office, Sleepy, was that like nobody ever hired anybody that worked under them for anything ever. So I think that was like the most significant part of this, was just that somebody else wanted Josh Barfield. It wasn't, to me, the story isn't even that he chose to stay. It's that somebody else like wanted a White Sox employee.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably the most surprising news of all that, you know, given the state of the team, that apparently he's intriguing enough to, you know, get an interview at what was, you know, a team that was in the postseason last year and like with the arrow pointing up and now just kind of whatever, regress some, but still it was just very, was not expecting that, like you guys said.
Yeah, I will say, Ian, like that, the one thing, like it was presented what, twice? It was like somebody wanted him for GM and then, or Boston, Baltimore wanted him for GM, and then Mark Feinstein said that he turned them down. It is kind of the same job that he has now. Like, it's a GM job, but it's second in command because of title inflation, basically. Like, all these teams, you know, you hire a president of baseball ops, then you can hire somebody's assistant GM as GM, then you can hire assistant you know, somebody's scouting director as assistant GM, and it's just, you know, kind of the way that it goes. I mean, in theory, Getz is the president of baseball operations for the White Sox, and his number two is Barfield. So it's really not that different other than the GM title.
Yeah. I mean, in that ultimate hierarchy of how things go, I mean, essentially that's what it is, right? You know, if you've got a president of baseball operations, essentially, you know, the GM is under him, as opposed to if they didn't have that position, he'd be just under the owner, like how it used to be. So, I mean, essentially it's kind of the same thing as an AGM role. I would think that he probably have a little bit more say over personnel decisions. I'm actually kind of curious why he wouldn't entertain the offer of, you know, kind of job hopping. I mean, I, you know, the way things are going now with workers' rights and how all that's gone since the pandemic. You know, like everybody else in every other profession, it seems like they hop from place to place to try and bring their, you know, income level up. I'm actually kind of surprised that he wouldn't take that.
Yeah, and so I guess the question is, like, does he want to run a team, right? And if he does, what gives him the best opportunity to do that? Is it staying as Chris Getz's number two in Chicago, or is it going and being the general manager in Baltimore? I guess I'd probably argue that it's going to Baltimore. He like clearly chose not to do that. So that's, yeah, I guess maybe that is the interesting part. I don't know, but he's clearly like it. This won't be the last one. I feel like the last time that we hear Josh Barfield up for one of these jobs.
Yeah, no, probably not. It's also interesting across town. Carter Hawkins has been rumored for the Nationals job. And so, is there another one that I'm forgetting? I know there's at least one that he's been, considered and has actually already interviewed. It was the Nationals to replace Rizzo.
Yeah, Nightingale said today that he's a finalist.
That's not bad.
And that's the
for
only
Cubs fans.
Like, Sleepy, is that the only current opening?
Baseball,
I think it is, because
I believe so.
Like, there were like rumors that Pittsburgh would open, and people thought Colorado would open. Yeah. And neither one of them have.
Yeah, but I mean, would you really want to dive into Colorado, though? I mean, given what that is,
probably
if it was open,
the same, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Pittsburgh, it's really hard to win with, because like you can, like you'll just never spend, and even in Colorado, like if you think you have like grand plans, like the rest of the division is just brutal. Like, I don't know how you, yeah. So Washington, I mean, if Washington spends again, that one's fine, I guess, like in a major market. But man, I don't know. If I was a Nationals fan, Carter Hawkins, like that would not excite me. That's like not the direction that I would want to go.
Well, I mean, you can also look at the out of town stupid quotient, you know? I mean, the Cubs have been like near playoffs for the, you know, they were in the lead for the division for quite a long time. So maybe after having seen the Nats struggle for a couple of years, maybe now that fires them up. I don't know.
Well, so I have some like plugged in, like Cub fan buddies that like do stuff similar to us, and they don't like Carter Hawkins at all. They think that, that Jed basically really fell in love with the Cleveland thing, that he'd be able to come and like, you know, create this like pitching factory, and their big league pitching dev is really good, but their minor league pitching development hasn't been great. So, you know, and he's kind of lacks aggression similarly to Hoyer. I think Jed Hoyer needs somebody next to him that's like super aggressive personally. That's like a yin and yang basically.
So
Colorado will pick 11th and Washington will pick 12th.
That's what it was. Okay. I couldn't remember if it was the A's or if
10th,
it was them.
10th, 11th.
The A's. 10th, A's 11th. Are one of those teams as well, right?
Yeah, but their record's
The Angels.
Yeah, the A's are back.
And Rockies are the only ones that are outside.
Angels, Nationals, and Rockies. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Pittsburgh made the right move of picking Skeens. I would say so. But you know, you never know. You give that one a year or two, and you could have something. You know, who knows? So the White Sox core. How are we feeling about that, Sleepy?
It's definitely, this second half has definitely given me a lot more optimism, because we've seen guys come up and, you know, perform and not just like fall flat on their face or forget how to hit, which was like the long, you know, the story of every other prospect, at least on the offensive side, that came up, they would just forget how to play baseball or something, like Oscar Colas, you know, go on and on. But these guys have come up and they've seemed ready for the challenge. And, you know, there's always adjustment periods and mini slumps and whatnot, but like they've performed, they've kept their composure. You know, it's been very nice and pleasurable to watch. That's for, you know, for certain.
Yeah. We've seen some struggles there. you know, as could be expected with an entire team of rookies, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the free agent market this year will be interesting to see what kind of guys they pull in, you know. I kind of, you know, I didn't want to watch Josh Rojas play at all. Like, I had zero interest in him getting any at-bats whatsoever. But as far as attitude from a veteran, it seemed like he was the kind of guy that you like to have filled in with these guys that kind of helps solidify the team. It's like one of those meat in between the bones type of guys that builds a team out. I don't know. You know, you've seen a lot of power out of Colson. The one thing that you know, hope that you don't continue to see is those days where he's going 0-for with a bunch of strikeouts, you know? So.
Yeah, it's a 29% K rate in the majors, I think, so far. And I mean, the BABIP is like 230. So, which, you know, cause it's like all homers and K's basically. But I think the defense has been pretty good. I think it's been a lot better than people were anticipating. So, like, we've talked about this a ton. I don't think there's any reason to move him off of short. That helps you, obviously. I think Teal has obviously been awesome. Caro's been good, so you're good there. Mydroth's, like, numbers aren't great, but his second half is really good. I don't think...
Started off really well, too.
Nobody thought they'd be 500 in the second half. So I think this is kind of a revelation. I'm really curious to see how much money they're going to spend. It's not going to be a ton, obviously, but like, do you add a couple of things? And then what do they do in the outfield? Because I don't think they can get rid of Benintendi, and I don't think you can have Benintendi and Talkman. I like Talkman, but your outfield can't be Benintendi, Robert, and Talkman again. Like, going in, because like, where are you at? You're adding a first baseman, and then that's like your only move. I mean, it's just, doesn't really make any sense. I would obviously, we'd all love to dump Benintendi, and then Talkman could be my left fielder. That would be great. That doesn't really seem feasible.
I kind of think it's also an issue with starting. If you continue to roll out Talkman, Benintendi, and Robert, you're looking at putting three guys in the outfield that over the last like 4 years are like a 50% injured rate. You know, you can't employ three guys in the out as your main starters in the outfield, guys that have been hurt for 60, 70 games a year for years now.
I'd say, and Talkman too, seems like he could probably use a lot more days, you know, out of the outfield like his legs just, I mean, they just don't seem to,
it's like 35
to
years
work old. Well. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I understand the struggle, but it's just like, you know, I think they, and especially too, with like, Braden's kind of second half performance, or, you know, when he got acclimated in Birmingham, like how fast his timeline could be for next year, like what they're, you know, they want to block him, like, because how fast they want to push him, you know, that's right. That's kind of the murky part there, but, you know, that's probably a little too far in front of the skis at this point.
I kind of think we're going to see Braden really quickly if he's good. You know what I mean? Like, because they were going to do the whole dog and pony show with Montgomery, and oh, darn, he has to go to Charlotte. And then if he was good for 2 weeks, he was going to come right up, but he was terrible. So it like took a while. Like, Braden, I don't know. Like, they might even send him to Charlotte right away. And if he hits, like, he's just in your outfield, because there's there's no reason not to, basically. So, yeah, that's one spot. I don't think they'll block him with like a long term piece. I just like hope it's something like I hope the free agent signings are better than Josh Rojas and Michael A. Taylor and like these like $1 million free agent signings. Like, it just doesn't, you know, even like at first base, can they afford Ryan O'Hearn? I don't know, you know, like Josh Naylor. We will see.
Austin Slater was the number one free agent acquisition, I would like to remind you.
Yeah, and he actually like did his job all year.
Well, he did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, he hit lefties.
Yeah, which was his job, apparently. Mm-hmm. So David brings up something that we have kind of talked about. And, you know, we kind of mentioned this thing a couple weeks ago, Sleepy, when you were not on. We had talked about the possibility. And you know, I heard David Haw on Inside the Clubhouse say that there's absolutely no shot that the White Sox would, or somebody said, calling in saying that there was absolutely no shot that the White Sox would give Kyle Schwarber the kind of money that you are going to have to give him. But then you also see this as, can we please stop with Teal and the outfield garbage? Let the rookie learn his actual job. So do you continue to, I mean, you want to get at bats for Teal and Caro. So because you have two primary catchers, where do these guys fit then? Are you going to sit there and swap them off between DH and catcher every game? Is that feasible? I mean, they can both hit, but if you get a chance to really upgrade the lineup with somebody like a Schwarber, I mean, even if it's not him, somebody that hits, you know, 35 home runs every year, do you do that? I don't know.
I mean, I think, especially for Teal, it would make, not that I'm advocating for it, but he has played left field or outfield in college. So it's not that he's that far removed from doing it. Maybe if it was a way to get the bat in the lineup like once a week so that he's not DHing, so you're not having to rotate, I guess it makes sense. But I mean, that's, you know, going on the scenario, you have a permanent DH or, you know, something, somebody that's their spot because they mash and that's what they do. Like for now, it's fine because who else is there, you know? But if they got a competent DH to just, you know, lock in that spot for 150 games next year, I mean, you got to figure something out. But then that gets to, you know, you have Benintendi or Talkman is your backup outfielder those days. You know, it just, it makes it murky, but I guess it'd be a good problem to have, having better players available in the lineup more regularly. So,
yeah, I mean, how much are you going to play Kyle Teal against lefties is the question, you know?
Like, yeah, true.
Like every day? Like, does, can he get the, because I think like Caro should probably catch versus left-handed pitching if possible. And then you just figure out a way to get, you know, Caro into the lineup against righties somehow, basically. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, especially if they get like a left-handed hitting first baseman. I think they probably need a right-handed hitting outfielder. And then you have like the Luis Robert thing too, where like, you know, I think we're all pretty certain at this point that they're picking up the option, but I am not at all certain that he's on their opening day roster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there might be like another glaring hole in the outfield too.
Hmm. Yeah. This is one that I kind of talked to somebody about on Twitter or YouTube or one of the comment sections about Max Muncy. And, you know, he's intriguing. If you look at his numbers, even though he did spend a bunch of time on the IL this year, his numbers off of the IL are like, I think he's got like a 147 WRC plus or something. The dude's murdering the baseball, but he still has an option for next, a club option for next year for like $10 million. And I don't think that the Dodgers are going to let him walk
for that.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think that for the White Sox, it also doesn't make sense because, again, you're looking at a guy that was injured for like 35-40% of the season, which is, if that's your top free agent get, it's hard to sell a guy that's injured for a third of the year and has been for like the last 2 or 3 years.
Sleepy, does Ryan Fuller's presence like stop you from being scared to death of somebody like that? Like, of Max Muncy is like the guy that comes to the White Sox and he's just horrendous and like and his career's over. Like we're all excited. Oh man, look at these numbers. And then he's just horrible. And we're just like, oh yeah.
That would be like my initial like natural reaction is like, okay, this is like an aging player who's been hurt, who will come here and just die because that's how it's gone. The story has been. So I would like to think with the progress we have seen with at least some of the young players under Ryan Fuller in the minors, both majors and minors, like I would like to think that, hey, maybe they could kind of keep that momentum going. But yeah, you signed Muncy and then, I mean, I think even last year too, it was the same thing where he missed a big chunk of time because of some sort of injury. And okay, so you're out, your big guy's out for a third of the year. You're still in the same infield logjam problem of nobody being able to hit. So what does, again, it would be exciting, it would be like progress in the right direction spending money, but like I don't know, what does it accomplish if he's there? You know, it's a Luis Robert thing. It's like, It's great when he's in the lineup, but when he's not, like, with, you know, okay, what are we going to do now?
Do you think, do we think that these guys are like the long-term guys that are going to be sticking around with the White Sox in these roles in Bannister and Fuller?
I think so. Because I don't know what they would be like promoted to do. Like, Bannister, I think, is on record as saying he doesn't want to do like more than this. Right? Because, like, could he go the Craig Breslow route and like run a team? Maybe, but he just doesn't seem like he wants to work that hard. He wants to just kind of tinker with pitchers and watch video and offer advice and stuff, you know. Like, I just
still be able to go and like, see his kids.
Yeah, this is like the, this is like exactly this is like the perfect role for him. He like likes doing pop-ins and going to Sabre seminars and learning like the new stuff and like I mean, Craig Breslow probably doesn't have time to do that stuff.
Think Fuller's sticking around that he doesn't get like a just a regular hitter, you know, coach of hitting for some franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is technically higher on the totem pole, right? It just depends on what he wants. Like, you know, I'm sure if he like wanted to be the White Sox big league hitting coach, they'd just make him the big league hitting coach, right? But he, I don't know, like maybe he wants this.
I mean, it would seem like, he's like the hitting czar of the organization, right? I mean,
He's in charge of
being a hitting coach would seem to be a step down because I don't know. I mean, just on the totem pole of an organization, you'd think that would be, if he wanted to do it, I'm sure they'd let him. But I think being like, hey, this is what we do, this is our philosophy, implement it, seems to be.
Yeah.
Unless he like wants to run his own like hitting academy, which I suppose he could do, but I don't know. I don't know if that would mesh with a major league season. I don't.
He was kind of given the say-so on whether Marcus Thames was sticking around. Is that, do I remember that correctly?
Yeah. So I had heard rumors that they might just have a new big league hitting coach. Cause like I had heard the name of, and I forgot, I said it like on two episodes ago, I think, that it's like the Rangers minor league hitting coordinator is like tight with Venable. Venable kept like a lot of staff that gets like already had here. And I'm sure, you know, it wasn't a deal breaker, obviously, right? But I do think if there's like a couple of changes to the staff, it shouldn't be that surprising.
Interesting. It'll be another interesting offseason. We'll see. You know, I mean, not only is the free agent market going to be interesting for the White Sox, do you think that there's like possibility of some trades going on here with the, I mean, technically we have a bunch of guys coming back from Tommy John surgery, so that kind of throws things in flux a little bit here, but they, it seems like they have a glut of pitching. Do you see them making some deals here to get rid of some of that minor league pitching to improve things?
I mean, I would say so, because if you're not going to spend and you want to improve, you deal from your strength, and they've the pitching department seems to be where it's at. I mean, who they would choose to move, you guys might have a better idea on that, but like, I think, I mean, trades would definitely be enticing. Like, what would you picture like in a rough scenario? Like, is that for, you know, like a minor league swap, like minor league player prospect swap, or like package for something like fringy, you know, like right, major league guy? I don't know. That's what I'm trying to like ballpark something in my head. Like, I don't even know where they would attack it from.
Well, I think I said like a few weeks ago, like, does like Sean Burke, Lenin Sosa, and like a close to the majors minor league reliever get you like, you know, one of these like Vargas types that you've always liked that's like on your big league team right away, right? Like, like a couple of, because like even looking at the 40 man and like Jim Margulis just wrote something at Sox Machine, like basically talking about what we talked about last Sunday, Ian, like just here's all these Rule 5 names. Here's all your guys coming off the 60 day. You can probably do it, but like they have decisions to make. If you also want to add like 5 free agents, right? Like you're just going to have, you're like, some of these guys are, you're going to have to move them. Like does Brian, yeah, that would be great. Yeah, Sean Burke and Sosa for Dolander would be awesome. I'm in.
Why not?
Where's Uncle Ted? I need his trade idea. Like some lefty power.
For Spencer right Jones?
Now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we can get somebody trade a bunch of dudes that stink for somebody that's really good. But no, like I won't be surprised by anything. Like, you know, if you like all of a sudden like Jonathan Cannon's traded for something younger and it frees up, because that's the thing, like as many of these pitchers as like we have that are like back end guys, like I think they can find back end guys anywhere. Like they've just shown you that they can. Like over the last 2 years, like Eric Fetty was a good deal. They found Shane Smith, they found Hauser and flipped him. Like even like Yohendris Gomez right now is like functional, right? Like they're going to do this. Like they're going to, you know, they'll have the number two pick in the Rule 5 draft again. Maybe they'll get somebody else. Like I'm not worried about them finding back end pitching. I think at this point, it's just kind of like, are the guys that are supposed to be good, good enough?
I guess like my feeling is that when I see the fact that the White Sox can do things like bring Yoendris Gomez up and get useful innings out of him, they can grab Shane Smith out of a Rule 5. Davis Martin turns into a guy. I often forget that other teams just miserably fail at this and that the back end of their rotation is an absolute travesty. So I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to trade, you know, at least some of the guys down in the farm system. I guess at that point it just becomes a, you know, tier list of who you're willing to give up and what somebody else is willing to give you back for that, I suppose. So speaking of Sleepy, you brought up academies. The White Sox have been rumored.
This is gross.
To be signing some kid from a middle school.
Yes.
On an island south of Miami.
An island far, far away. Yes.
What does that mean for the White Sox international system?
Sleepy, you want to do this? Like I feel like people come to you and I for this sort of thing. That's why I wanted to have you, because while this is like very positive in my opinion,
yes,
we just never have to broach it because it's just so weird and gross. And it, like there's all the rumors that Jerry doesn't like this part of the business and that's why they don't do it, or I don't know if it's that or they're just like incompetent, or like Kenny likes 20-year-old Cubans because they can help sooner. There's like a whole right, but
sure,
like the White Sox don't do this. So for anybody that hasn't seen, yes, they have an agreement with the top international prospect in 2030.
Allegedly.
Yeah. For $6 million, which is a big, which is like a big time bonus. Like this will be probably the top bonus in that class. And look, we can get into like whether there will even be an international signing class then. But like if it's the top guy in 2030, Sleepy, what does that mean? How old is this kid right now?
It is reported he is 12.
Yes. So the White Sox have agreed to give a 12-year-old $6 million 5 years from now. Yeah. And it's great because this is what the Padres do and the Yankees do and the Dodgers when they sign like the top kid in all these classes. Uh-huh. Like they usually reach that agreement. I think like at 13, 14 usually, but
yeah,
you know, Wander Franco is, you know, maybe he's a bad
Mets
example.
Just did it last year for $5 million.
Yeah, with, for the 20.
Elian Pena. Right?
Elian Pena, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they knew that they were signing him for years.
Sure.
This is how this works.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, it's really weird. And people are like, oh, why is this leaking out right now? The White Sox aren't going to say anything about this for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Even off the record, by the way. This is all like Dominican reporters and stuff who talk to the Buscones that Ian always talks about. And the agents and the trainers and all these other people that are like basically like stealing money from these kids down.
Yeah. I mean like the thing too, the White Sox strategy, I think like this has to be the most alleged prominent signing they've had since like a top of the class guy since what, Mike Rodolfo.
Like, yeah. And that was like one
in 2013,
5 million or something.
Yeah. I mean, which is like, obviously this is like a drastic, drastic difference. And like, it's a very positive like development that they are willing to dip into the pool of like signing the elite prospect type like this. But it's also very unsettling that that's how this works. And it's just weird. Like, it's weird to be like jacked up to sign a 12-year-old 4 or 5 years from now, because like, it's just the system. And
yeah,
it makes sense. Like, why you would be like adverse to wanting to do it, because it's, you know, it's weird. But like this, if you're a big player in the market and want like this kind of talent, like you do it, you have to do it.
So. Yeah. I mean, if he's the top player in that class, right. And in theory, 26, 27, 28, 29, those players are all kind of accounted for. I mean,
yeah,
for the most part, because we just explained how this process works, and they're willing to pay like top dollar for the top guy in that class. That's a positive, like that David Keller like knows how this works. And Chris Getz is like, good, do it. Like, you know, a lot can happen between now and then. People talk about like how binding is it. It's not binding at all, but like, look, it's going to be tough for somebody else top 6 million. So I would say if there's an international class in 2030 and we're all still here, this probably happens. But there could be an international draft by then, which would change everything.
Yeah. Cause with it, I mean, I know they tried to throw it in the last CBA.
Yeah. They always try to put it in the agreement, which is
they always try to put it in, and then they had the extension and it missed and whatever. They still have their pool. Like, I wonder too, like, I know they're building the new academy, and it's, I think, supposed to open or be ready to open next, like the end of next season
next year. Yeah.
Mid.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know how much of a selling point that would be, is like, hey, you, cause I mean, essentially what they do, if they do have the agreement, right. And he's pretty much going to go into hiding. Like, you're not really going to see or hear a lot about him. It's like, hey, we're
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Going to have this brand new facility, come here and practice and mash and whatever, and when you're eligible to sign in 3, 2.5, whatever years it is at that point, like, here you go, you can train at this brand sparkling shiny new toy. I don't know if that's part of the selling point, you know. It's, again, it's all weird and kind of gross, but like, maybe this is all, like, it's all part of it. We've just, again, the Sox have never done it. They always went after the immediate help Cuban guys that are, hey, you're 20, you can be in the, theoretically be in the majors in like a year and a half if all goes right. But like, most of the time that didn't really work, but still, you know.
I don't even know this, and I probably should. Is he Dominican or Venezuelan?
I thought he was Dominican.
Okay.
I
so
think Dominican.
I thought.
So yeah. That's like a drastic positive change too, that part of it. Because they've been like dead in the Dominican Republic for years, which is like basically Marco Patti's downfall. It was like high level old guys out of Cuba, Venezuelan, like interesting Venezuelans pitching, and no position players out of the Dominican, which is like the, you know, the number one hotbed in this market, essentially. Like, you know, and like everything David Keller said last year, I loved hearing. But the thing you have to understand is, like, even like the 26 class in January, there's like, I think there's two rumored signings for that class already. I mean, those are Marco Patti signings still, because we're seeing right now how this works, right? Like, I don't even know when the like first real David Keller class is coming, like 28 maybe, you know? So I don't know. Joshua, it is the cheapest way to add premium talent. That's for sure. That's, because, I mean, as much as we're like, oh, you're going to blow your whole pool, like $6 million is nothing for like a talent that's supposedly as good as this one.
Known Cuban hater James Hesterman says no Cubans. I mean, this is just a random question, but I mean, did the White Sox finally hire somebody that's willing to actually do those things, or is it a change with the White Sox that they actually have finally realized that the way that we make the best moves in the international market is by leveraging preteens.
Sleepy, I just picture like Jerry Reinsdorf like shoved in a closet with the door locked. Like,
I know they like that's the only reason. Like, I they
or he's like, wait, 20, just... he's like 2030. Oh, I'm gonna be gone by then. That's fine. Do whatever
yeah.
you want.
Yeah. The bench warmers thing, they wrote, like, they put his yeah. picture on a piece of yeah. paper, but they wrote, I am 16 on it instead. Yeah. So yeah. they're like, okay, but... it's a little bit better, maybe, Jerry.
Yeah. He's like, that's Ishbia's problem. Like, this yeah, is,
exactly.
This
that's,
is
an
this
Ishbia,
is not my...
that's an Ishbia that's, issue.
This is January of 2030. He's like, if I'm not dead, I will be not running this team anymore.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh. I mean,
blast from the past. Odrisama Despagne. Great, oh, yeah. great wow. comment here, Vince.
Yes.
How are we going to feel if when Ishbia finally comes in, do you see him sitting behind the dugout with a headset like Ursae's daughter?
Yeah. So I actually like don't hate that if she wants to learn the business. Like, as long as she's not like, hey, go for it here. Like, I don't really have a problem with her on there, but like, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, Ishbia sits like in the scout seat sometimes.
There.
Yeah, he's just like hanging out. His kids like sit there and eat hot dogs. Like, you know, like yeah. it's. I mean, what would you be doing? That's what I'd be doing if I had.
I guess yeah. If I was a part majority owner, whatever, I'd sit front row and smash.
Yeah, I'd probably just go to baseball games and not work. It would be great.
Yeah.
If you actually like baseball, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Vince said Reinsdorf was only 78 when this kid was born.
Good Lord. So moving along here, I just wanted to point out, you know, moving along to the minor leagues here, because if you guys don't know, our guy down here at the end, Sleepy, does the Trending on the Farm series every week. And Riley Gowans has turned in a pretty fantastic. So he hit a dead arm period at a point during this year and had a couple of tough starts in a row. But since then, out of seven out of eight starts, he's gone 5+, and he's only allowed 9 runs in those 8 starts. He's kind of been an anchor in Birmingham. What are your thoughts on what we can expect from him next year?
I mean, so like, I'm surprised not surprised at this moment, because they need, with them promoting Shane Murphy, they need somebody to kind of anchor the Birmingham rotation. They're trying to repeat. I mean, for next year, I mean, he's by far the team leader in strikeouts, 151. Next closest is Hagen with 108. Like you said, he had the little dead arm period, but he's usually nails like all the time. I do. Whenever I'm writing up the Trending on the Farm, there was a time where I didn't have to edit any of the starting pitchers for Birmingham. I would just have to change, like, you know, the whatever their start was and just put it in and like edit some of the words, because it was clockwork all the time. For next year, I mean, I think it'd be reasonable to expect him to. Do you think it's even necessary for him to go? I mean, I guess he's like a fringy guy to go to Charlotte, but would he be some? I don't, you probably see more of like the velo numbers. Like, I don't know what he sits at routinely, but like, would he be some, if you move him to the 94? So like,
yeah, I think it's like
move him to the 95. Pen. Is he like a move to the pen, pick up a couple and just middle relief? Like, would get him quicker, like in spring training or something? Cause I mean, he's obviously has the durability to start, but I don't know what they see him as, like, because they seem to have a lot of starting options. So I don't know that he fits in there, but as a bullpen arm, I think considering what he shows, he can dominate, and he's done that in like shorter burst, velo tick up, you know?
Yeah. I kind of think, you know, it's just like, it's kind of, you know, you heard when the Aaron Bummer trade was made, that he was kind of like a last minute addition to the trade. And, I mean, to me, it more or less looked like, hey, Atlanta's like, hey, so if you take this stuff that we're getting rid of in a trade for Aaron Bummer, we'll give you this if you'll just take these guys. and that's, you know, that was the guy that they chose in that deal. But if, you know, in revisionist history, I would like to say that the White Sox said, that's the guy that we want. We'll take these guys from you to make your decisions easier. If, you know, for this deal. But I honestly don't know. I don't know what to make of him for next year. I don't know. There's so many more guys I would think that have priority there.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it tough for me to kind of decide, like, who's going to be the guy that's going to move up. I'm assuming that, you know, like the Evan McKendries and the Clevenger and, you know, guys like that are going to move along.
Mm-hmm. But you'll have new guys that are the same.
Sure.
Like, in, you know, they do it every year.
And with, right? The rash of pitching injuries they had too, you know, like, he could be a necessity for the rotation there, given that, what, six guys went down with TJ in spring, you know? So, like, maybe he's just needed to eat innings there. If they tried to shorten them, you know, we could see.
They're not all going to be back, like, right away, though. It's very staggered.
Sure. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could be in Charlotte. I just think he's, you know, probably in Charlotte, and he's like one of your next. I mean, obviously, like, I think Spencer Adams and Spencer Adams. Oof, my goodness, whoa. That's
he's finally healthy again. Yes,
that's a blast from the past. Mason Adams, Kai Bush, like some of these other guys, I think are like ahead of him, but they're just like not ready.
Yeah, and I mean, Connor McCullough kind of made it back kind of quick, I want to say, to actually like pitching in games. I think he kind of, I'd have to go back and look exactly when he dropped out, but I feel like he came back pretty quick. But I you know, like, I feel like at least one or two of these guys is probably going to come back fairly quick. But again, we're looking at an innings limit, and I was actually talking to somebody earlier today about the fact that these bullpens are just getting absolutely gassed at every single level, because it seems like
all the starters are on three inning limits.
Exactly. Like, is that everybody's at like a 45 pitch limit, or, you know, can only pitch five innings. And then, so you're eating up four innings. So your bullpen's eating up, you know, like, 24 plus innings a week.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
So
Drew Thorpe carry, like, I saw it written that he's like targeting the All-Star break for a return, I believe, like June-ish, or maybe, you know, I guess the All-Star break's in July, but it won't be, you know, it won't be a surprise if it's like that long. Basically, it's like 15 months.
Yeah, I think I would think that Larson's going to, you know, probably the ACL for a little bit, and then hopefully moving to Canny right away. But
be on like that Christian Opper, you know, plant, like, you know, where it's just kind of, he's slow played a little bit. We have Prelander Baroa, who would essentially be in the big leagues. Kai Bush, probably Charlotte or the big leagues, you know, and that's the thing. Like, a guy like Kai Bush could come back, like, everything goes right. You know, I mean, he could throw 97 out of the pen with a good breaking ball. Or he could be nothing because, you know, he doesn't make it back, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, these like close to the majors guys that went down, it's pretty interesting. There's like a whole handful of them.
Yeah. I was earlier today, I was watching the Barons, and you had Andrew Dahlquist, Jared Kelly, and then Caleb Freeman were the last three pitchers in the game. And I'm just sitting here, like, running through all these names of who the White Sox are going to have to shuffle around and promote or let go or whatever. And it's just there are just so many names trying to make sense of it all. Like, that part's going to be different. I mean, I have to imagine, you know, like, they're probably just going to throw up on the big whiteboard in the war room, just like everybody's names. And have to go through all this stuff and decide what they're going to do.
Well, and you know the relievers that they like, because they're sending a couple of them to the Arizona Fall League. And it was kind of like, ooh, that's an interesting, like Carson Jacobs, right? Like, wasn't like a big time prospect, but that's a guy they like if they're sending him there.
Dude's got, he's, he's got stuff, you know. You know, I noticed it last year as soon as he came up with the cannonballers. I was like, whoa, who's this 69 or this 6'9" guy?
Yeah,
that's just throwing heat with the nasty sinker, and he's been pretty good.
Baseball asked too about the guy we got for Middleton. He's thinking so Juan Corella is also down with Tommy John as well. Yeah, he's in their system.
And Kevin, yes, Kai Bush did start for the Sox, but I mean he made three starts from when he got called up to when he got pulled for TJ. So I don't know that you can really trust exactly. You know, it could have been just his elbow sore. And he just pitched through it for a couple of games, and then, boom, you know, he's done for TJ.
Could have theoretically been injured, like, that whole time.
Because, like, right before he was called up, too, he was in Birmingham and was just, like, lights out. He was shoving. He was awesome and what got promoted, and was just, like, lost it right away then.
Yeah. Then Charlotte happened to him. He was a victim. Well, yeah. He was a victim of Charlotte.
Yeah, I think he had something like a one whip or something like that in Birmingham before he got pulled up. So, I mean, clearly there's something there. It's just, you know, what he can do. So, Sleepy, what do you make of Lucas Gordon? Because this year with Winston-Salem, he was like 0 in a billion, and then he goes to Birmingham. And he's allowed like 4 hits across 4 starts or whatever, and has allowed like one or two runs.
Yeah. Like I don't know if it's just because the umpires are better in AA that he's getting more of maybe that some of the calls are missing in high A, but you know, he seemed to be that, you know, I don't know, the command over stuff guy, like similar kind of to like Mason Adams, how he was thought of before. It was just like, this is a guy who's just here and can eat innings, but then was just like good, performed. And Lucas Gordon came up since being promoted to Birmingham, he's been impressive. And like the brief action he's seen, I mean, again, like, I don't know. I probably have to see how many starts does he have there? Like 3 or 4 now?
I thought it was four. Yeah, I thought it was four.
I think that's right. So, I mean, it definitely.
The fourth one was today.
Okay, the fourth was today. Okay, so definitely like heading into next year, like it'll be something to keep track of as to how like an extended look there will play. Because if you have a, like, you know, it's like a Shane Murphy thing. He's not going to blow you away with the stuff, but like at some point it's hard to ignore the 1 point whatever ERA and a, you know, minuscule whip. Like you have to kind of put some respect on it at some point. So for me, it'll be interesting to see how Lucas Gordon will do with an extended look, or a should be an extended look next season with the Barons. But the early returns are great, I will say. So,
Jack asks, have you guys seen Yoiker Fajardo's stats? I was told we wouldn't miss him.
Yes.
But I will say this. Yes, his numbers look really, really good, but when I saw him pitch against the Cannonballers, I won't say that I didn't think he was any good, but I didn't think his numbers should be that good. That was my thought. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't see didn't he win player of the month or something for them in the red pitcher of the month?
He did. He was their minor league pitcher of the month. Yeah.
I try to avoid. Similar to you guys.
And we have Cam Boeser, so.
He's
just doing all the clubhouse repairs. Wasn't he a carpenter or something?
Yeah, he's a carpenter.
Before?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Have him fix up woodworking jobs that we have going on.
This seems like a job for Ian to help James Hesterman here. Who wants to explain Shane Murphy?
Can I explain him?
He said, "Explain Shane Murphy." That's what the
Duke can pitch.
Yeah, he can. He's got great command, and he knows what he wants to do, and he does it. I mean, that's like the best way that I can explain Shane Murphy is that, you know, he doesn't have overpowering stuff, but what he does really well.
Yeah.
You know,
I put him in the Mason Adams bucket.
Yeah.
For me personally, like him and Mason Adams are kind of like how you said, he knows what he wants to do and just does it. And Mason Adams pre-injury, of course, but that's where I just kind of grew attached. I always liked, like, I liked him when they drafted him and he put up nice numbers. But then this year was just, I didn't expect that. So,
yeah,
no, he just knows how to pitch, man. Like, he's good.
Yeah.
He made it he made it into the back half of our 30 and Baseball America's 30 without, I mean, his stuff's just okay, but mm-hmm. he like really knows how to pitch.
So wasn't Shane Murphy's, his brother, was he like a sixth rounder or something by the Blue Jays?
Maybe. That's,
I know he right. pitched in the majors I think the Blue Jays or.
So he was another John Cazanis, like Arizona guy. Mark Burley, Tanner Banks, host of others, you know, that John Cazanis finds out in Arizona. So, Sleepy, beginning of the year, you know, me and Ian talked a lot because people asked about, like, what a successful season for the White Sox would look like, right? And I think it was tough to put, like, a win-loss barometer on this. As, you know, like, sure. obviously, don't win 41 again, please, for the love of God. but, I mean, I think I said, like, you know, if at the end of the year, I feel like their hitting development was better under a guy like Ryan Fuller, like check, right? That's one. I think I feel pretty good about that going forward. And just like more synchronization, like between departments, find a couple of guys that you think could be core contributors on your next good team and have like number one pick draft odds. They did all that, I think. I think it's a success.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I will say the first half of the season, at least with the major league club, was like a slog to get through. That was tough because it was a lot of just old, bad retread guys. And then you saw like Colson really struggling and all the, you know, the guys were down on the minors. But like we kind of mentioned earlier, like when they came up, they looked like they belonged. And you know, it's not going to be perfect. It feels like, I don't know the exact number, but it feels like half the team, nearly half the team is rookies. So this is their first taste. And like, yeah, you expect some struggles, but like, you know, we knew they weren't going to be great, but we've seen like the positive signs and they're in the, you know, the Rock Chalowski or whoever, you know, you want to put it 1-1 conversation for next year. They're firmly in control unless they go on a real heater for the last 2 weeks of the season. But yeah, I mean, I think post break, this has been as successful as you could spin whatever the record is, 57-93, whatever it is, you know. So, I mean, I it's definitely positive. Now, like, these guys need to do it for more than half a season, of course, as we go into next year. But it's definitely promising returns, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think they'd get to 60. And I think they're going to get to, you know, if they're 61 and 101 or whatever, like, I think, you know, that's a 20-win improvement. And you're going to go into the year, like, feeling pretty good about Colson and Teal and some pitching. And then, you know, you have Caro and Mydroth as other parts of, you know, potentially whatever. Like, I think Montgomery and Teal are the two big ones. I mean, they're both going to put up two WAR seasons, like basically just playing in the second half. I mean, they look like definite regulars like right now. So yeah, so I do think it's just, I think it's going to be interesting. They need lottery luck for sure. I mean, if you guarantee me the 3 pick right now, I take it. Like, number 3 would be great. Like that would be fine. Like, deathly afraid of this system, but, you know, all you can do is, like, watch it and hope, basically, that they don't, like, end up with the 7th pick or something.
Well, end up with 6 and then not be eligible.
Yeah, next year.
The next year.
Yeah.
Because they won the lottery by falling 5 spots.
That's Ian's nightmare.
Yeah, if it's the dumbest.
That happens, we're not even.
My mind.
We're not even going to be able to record.
Yeah.
I will be livid.
Yeah. I hope that the next CBA, I hope that gets rectified.
Well, like the thing is,
if you fall, you should not win the lottery.
I think like four is probably the cutoff, right? Like you could live with four, but like I'd rather pick seven than five or six.
Yeah. I mean, at that point.
Yeah. If it didn't count as winning the lottery. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like, you can pick seven and still be eligible the next year.
Yes. Yeah. Like that's the big problem with it.
At least. I think it should be like top three. Like there's no way you should be eligible for the top overall pick if you're, you know, picking third the year before. Yeah. Like I get that, but I mean like to say that picking sixth is winning the lottery when you actually drop is ridiculous. So Sleepy, part of your thing that you do on the trending on the farm is the ACL. So Doug asks who from the ACL might break out next year. Just give him a couple of names here. I mean, I have Fabian Isala moved up to Cannonballers already, so we don't have him. Leandro Alcinois also up, but who else?
Yeah, so Fabian Isala was the guy who I believe I put at number 30 on my list from rough memory. He's a young righty and just put up good numbers throughout the season. James, help me out here. Who was the outfielder that they promoted from the DSL?
Oh yeah, Christian Gonzalez.
Christian Gonzalez. He's a guy to keep an eye on who just performed well in the DSL and then got to the ACL and kept producing. I mean, the weird part with the ACL was that they had a lot of like older, dudes that were just kind of there.
25-year-old guys there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's hard. You can't like put any stock into that, but now I can't remember who his name was, but he was the starting like outfielder last year in Kannapolis and he spent the whole year in Arizona.
Oh yeah. You had like Alcala was there and
He came over from the Red Sox. His name is,
Albert Seguin, that guy.
But he was like a young dude and then just like, okay, just kind of seemed destined for that. So it's really the younger players are the ones you really need to pay attention to there. And they didn't really have a whole lot. I mean, I guess like Landon Hodge
will be there.
We're thinking will be there.
I think Hodge and Boughton will both be there next year. And then I think you'll have multiple guys from the DSL coming potentially. Cause I think Carlson and Fauske are going to be on the Bonnemer path. Like they're going to Kannapolis.
Sure. Yeah. And cause what do you think? Herrera from the DSL
Maybe even Cruz still. I mean, he had like a really rough start, but he's like 18 and he was good like in his last like 40 games. You know, like there's got like Frank Mieses made the DSL All-Star team. Like that's probably your rookie ball team next year.
Yeah.
Because it does seem like Keller will sign a full class of position players to play, right? I don't know if they're any good, but there will be you know, at least like 10 plus position players signed in January that'll like be in the DSL play. Like it's very rare that guys hold over. The White Sox guys do because our classes have been so bad.
So I'm just baseball asked how different is the ACL from the DSL skill wise? I would say, and I don't know what your background is, baseball is like to what level you played, but if I was to say something, I would say it would be like a difference between like sophomore versus varsity high school ball. It's like it's a step up in competition and it kind of is going to make or break guys, I guess, because if you get somebody from the DSL that may have looked okay in the DSL, if they come to the ACL and they're not actually that guy, they'll get shown up really quick.
Well, it's kind of like Sleepy was saying, like you could have multiple 25-year-old pitchers that would be like really good in the Frontier League, you know?
Yeah.
Like go to Arizona and throw out of the bullpen and they're like fine, right? But they're not prospects, but like they're striking out teenagers. That does not happen in the DSL. The DSL is like teenagers. Like occasionally there's like a 22-year-old Venezuelan catcher or like some pitcher that like can't hit that's like converting that's older.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, the product is really very bad.
Yeah, and generally, like the DSL too, like it's just like gaudy walk numbers because nobody can find the plate. So like you see a lot of like inflated on base percentages because there's games that are like just littered with just walks and walks and walks, and there are slogs to get through. So it's like Ben Newman Bailey, when who was posting 450, it was the behemoth person. I mean, I loved him. It just like following him in the DSL, and then he did okay. The thought of him.
It's why I'm just like scarred. I'm always so careful to like rank those guys because it's just you don't know what it means. Ian, it kind of reminds me of like when you go see 5-year old baseball, and they just like run the bases and score because like the ball is being thrown. You know what I mean? It's like don't stop until you're out. Basically, that's the DSL.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's so bad.
Loud
tools. That's what the people look for.
Yes.
That's exactly it. It's just loud tools. Who's got the loud tools? You know, you got Jorge Vera, 21-year-old over there striking out 16-year-olds at an amazing clip. You know, Ian loves the thought of Albertus. I mean, I am still not convinced that he actually exists.
He's a ghost until further notice.
Exactly. I don't know that he's actually anything for real. You got anything else? Anything else this week there, James, that you are really aching to get out here into?
I don't think so. We're getting to the, what do we got? 12 big league games left, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So we'll see if they, you know, I think the talking point will be if they can avoid 100 losses. I don't know that they're going to quite get there, but you know, it'll be 60 wins probably, I would think, which is a, you know, pretty significant improvement.
Yeah.
I would have to love to see them. Yeah, I would love to see them not lose 100, but I mean, because now that they've got the number one seed all locked up,
it's basically locked up. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and win. Go win out. You know, win all 12. Let's avoid 100. Let's you know, that'd be great. I just don't. Me and Sleepy were talking about this before you hopped on in the lobby beforehand, James. it's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be real. Real tough for them to go 6-6, I think, with this competition coming up. Yeah. You good for me walking this thing out? All right. Well, thanks for coming and hanging out, Sleepy. Appreciate it. If you guys do not follow at Sleepy_Herald_, he does our trending on the farm series. And when he can get, free from his Rugrats, he comes and hangs out with us sometimes. So thanks for coming and hanging out. We appreciate you. Thank you. All right. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast on the Just Baseball Media Network. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox. And now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there's a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. He is Steve Hassman at Sleepy Herald. Thank you for listening. Thanks for coming and hanging out, guys. We'll catch up with you guys next week some point, you know, Sunday, 8 p.m., like normal. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for coming and hanging out in the chat. Thanks for driving the conversation. We appreciate you, and we will catch you guys next week. Have a great week. Thanks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.